We recap the final game of the NBA Finals from Boston and throw confetti for the Boston Celtics. We talk about why Jaylen Brown won Finals MVP, and we look ahead to the offseason decisions facing Boston and Dallas. That and more coming up right now on this episode of No Cap Room. Hello, friends. Welcome to No Cap Room. My name is Jake Fisher, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports. I'm in Boston. I have confetti. Woo! The Celtics are the champions. Banner 18. Riding with me from our offices in Manhattan, it is senior NBA writer for Yahoo Sports. It's my man. It's your man. It's everyone's man. It's Dan Devine wearing a tie. How you doing, buddy?
I'm great, man. Yeah, I figured if the champion, I wasn't going to be in Boston. I wasn't going to be wearing a suit because I'm just in the office here. But I figured I could wear a tie. Least I could do to show some respect for the office, some respect for the night where a champion could be crowned. And a champion was crowned. The, I don't know if you could see. It's like a flower sort of print here on the tie. We're going to give our flowers to the Boston Celtics. They were the best team in the league since the ball went up in October. They were the best team throughout the playoffs, and they are a worthy champion, absolutely beating the brakes off of the Dallas Mavericks in Game 5.
That they did. 106-88 is your final. 4-1 is your series score. Again, banner 18. I will tell you, as someone who still smells like champagne from the locker room festivities, there was definitely some "fuck the Lakers" banner 18 talking going on. Plenty of cigars before the game even ended. And I watched many a grown man, not many, I'd say a couple, gingerly touch the tips of their cigars to light one another while having them in their mouths. That was something I wasn't expecting to see. Also wasn't expecting to see Dan's boy, Eddie House, multiple times. Eddie House acted like I think people expect the meme version of Paul Pierce to act, being that I ran downstairs from the ninth floor halo before the game ended, just kind of spit myself out into the stadium section where Eddie happened to be sitting, and then I found my way to the media section to get down the stairs there. Popped over Eddie House over my shoulder, like "Where's Waldo?" Like grabs Cedric Maxwell in a headlock as he's winding down the radio broadcast. And then I'm waiting to see Ray Allen and Brian Scalabrine and Eddie House. They're all on the floor together as the trophy celebration's going on. Then after everyone leaves the stage, Eddie House is back on the stage. It's still here. Eddie House had a hell of a night. Happy for him. Dan, how was your night from watching these games, this game, excuse me, but many games you watched in the office?
It's true.
And do you have any big takeaways from this one?
I mean, my main takeaway is I'm sort of in like the Magneto glass box, like the Magneto jail cell from X-Men, and less fun to watch it in here than Eddie House had. But my main takeaway is like the question was, did Dallas like find something in game four that would be replicable, that could be a formula for them going forward? Or was it just kind of that the Celtics up 3-0, knowing they had the series in hand, maybe had like a human nature let go of the rope loss? And the Celtics came out looking extremely intent on making life hard on Dallas right away. 9-2 run to start the game. Defense was locked in. They weren't hitting their own shots, but they were generating good looks. They had clear game plan stuff they wanted to get to. And it just became clear pretty quickly, like, oh yeah, the Celtics are not screwing around. They are locked in. They are focused and engaged on getting this done tonight. And it wasn't so much that Dallas's formula couldn't have worked, but Boston was like, it reminded you quickly that Boston was just the better team and had been the better team for the entire first three games to run up that 3-0 lead. So much of what we saw was a continuation of those first three games where it's like the Celtics can get good shots whenever they want. They have clear buttons they can push to make life hard on Dallas defensively. They have a clear game plan defensively of like, we are going to make everything difficult on Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving like absolute House of Horrors performances in Boston. Such a gigantic swing from the way he looked in Dallas to the way he looked in Boston. And that was like, if the Boston bet all series long was, if we just grind Luka down and make everything hard on Kyrie, there's not going to be enough supplementary offense elsewhere to make up for it. And even when some of those guys did pop up, like Josh Green making three pointers in the first half.
Four to start.
Yeah.
Deep for Josh Green.
Donte Exum made a three in the first half. Your boy.
Definitely my boy.
Derek Jones Jr.
Am I the biggest Donte Exum fan outside of the country of Australia?
Yeah. You're up there. You're certainly up there. Derek Jones Jr. had 10 points in the first half. I think he'd scored 23 points in the series and he had 10 in the first half. And Boston just didn't overreact to any of that and was like, That is like the biggest thing of any Joe Mazzulla team is like, or this Joe Mazzulla team throughout the season, like they do not overreact to when stuff isn't going their way. They stick with the game plan and just keep hammering it.
They expect the game to go as they don't expect it to go.
One of many wonderful Mazzulla-isms and, the general idea that he's got. But yeah, it felt pretty clear pretty quickly that this was not like a carryover of game four. And then when the Celtics went on their big run at the end of the first quarter, it was kind of like, all right, if Dallas doesn't counterpunch early in the second, we're done. And then we got done pretty quick.
Yeah, before we get to the end of the run or the run at the end of the first quarter, definitely stood out to me from the get-go, Drew Holiday as a screener. Yep. Either slipping it immediately or setting it and rolling. He had their first 6 points. And just kind of found like a crease and a pocket in Dallas's defense that seemed to like be open from the jump. And sure, Dallas played it even. I think it was tied at 16, if memory serves correctly, after they fell down a little bit. But yeah, after that first quarter run where Tatum had one really hard drive and one, he's, flexing and pounding his chest. A lot of emotion out of him, which doesn't usually play with. He's kind of a pretty stoic, reserved guy. I think part of it is for all the external noise and the pressure that gets put on you when, I was really struck by how many people around this organization, around the building tonight were kind of repeating the same theme of like, it's been so long. And like, it's been a long time coming. Like, that's what happens when you make the conference finals when these two guys were a rookie and a sophomore in Tatum's very first year. And it's really not like so early when you think about it. Like Steph's first title came, if I'm doing mental math off the top of my head, he was drafted in 09, like 6-7 years after that.
Right.
LeBron, like Jordan. Like this isn't, it kind of feels like it happened when it was meant to happen. But like you could feel all of the noise and all of the naysayers and the doubt at the half, all of Tatum's 16 points, except for the one step back three at the end of the second quarter, all of them came at the rim.
Yeah.
Which is like, felt kind of exercising demons like to me. It felt kind of similar to LeBron Miami hitting those pull-ups in Boris Diaw's face, because that's been the knock on Tatum, right? That he either can't get there, and when he does, he can't finish. And I don't know what the numbers will finish out, because he missed a couple of layups down the stretch on the fourth when the game was well in doubt. But I mean, it to me, that was what I was feeling and observing as you saw him pounding his chest and hanging on the rim and really kind of celebrating his routine ways to the rim all first half.
Yeah, I mean, 5-for-8 inside the arc in the first half, 5-for-7 right around the basket. Actually, 5-for-5 at the rim in the first half. He missed a couple of like
money.
A couple from like floater range, but when he got actually to the restricted area, he was finishing through contact. And yeah, I mean, to some degree, also like that felt like a continuation too, because so much of the story of games one and two was him just repeatedly putting his head down, getting to the and driving hard. And either looking to finish for himself, obviously he didn't do that so well in the first two games, or creating. And I think the story of the player development story, and we'll get into Tatum and Brown and their just sort of larger journey as we move forward. But like there was that Marcus Smart a couple of years ago saying like everybody knows that those guys are going to have the ball and they want to take the shots and they don't want to pass it. And it was like a harsh critique, but it was an accurate critique. And those guys both had to advance their games and grow their games. And that's one way, like a giant way to do it. And it was not an easy and quick transition for them, but they both made it. And like Tatum finishes with 11 assists tonight. Brown finishes with 6 assists tonight. Their ability to, with the game on their shoulders and the team on their shoulders, handle more of that shot creation workload for other people, look to use the drive to create, the way that it allowed both of them to punish Luka Doncic throughout this series and basically make him the main character of this series. Like Jason Kidd has been really adamant, like he's in every pick and roll, he's in every isolation. They're going at him constantly and everybody can, but it starts with those two guys and their ability to get downhill, collapse, kick, create, get the machine humming. It's just, it was an easier shot or better, higher quality shot generating machine than Dallas had access to at any point in the series. And that was the story of the series. Dallas could not generate easy looks ever. Boston could generate easy looks almost every time they got the opportunity to. And, you know, on a large enough sample, long enough timeline, that aggregates to one team's a hell of a lot better than the other one.
Let's just go there to Luka and Kyrie. Let's start with Kyrie because I don't want to just pile on Luka because that's what we did the last time you and I spoke through microphones into a camera. Because I left games 1 and 2 here thinking, you know, he just had some bad games. Like, I don't know if there's any ghosts in this arena, blah, blah, blah. But after this showing tonight, I mean, it just feels like it, man. There's something, I mean, this was supposed to be his second home. He was supposed to be up on this stage with those dudes. Mm. He was supposed to be the Jrue Holiday for Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. And this crowd despises him. There's venom in the air.
Yeah.
In the Kyrie sucks chants. And it's so loud and so deafening. It just, I've been to a ton of games in my career. I just talked to Phil Pressey, Celtics great Phil Pressey, about how we were both rookies at Summer League 2013 in Orlando. That there's something different about the vitriol towards Kyrie in this arena that I just think it's ineffable, but it's there. Kyrie shot just 27.6% from three in the finals. Here, it felt like everyone he chucked up was rimming out. And he ended up hitting three. One of them came at the top of the key here when the game was well in doubt. But, like, they needed a heroic effort from both of those dudes in order to extend this series. And they didn't get one from either. And Kyrie, I think, it was, I mean, Luka is Luka. He's a mixed bag from on both sides of the floor. But with Kyrie, it was still shocking to me, like, how little wiggle he had to get around guys. And he had to, like, resort to a lot of the Kobe back my guy down from the elbow, do my little dream shake fadeaway instead of getting all the way to the rim. That, like, maybe it's just tired. Maybe it's the fact that he's got huge, long athletes guarding him most of this. But he was a shell of himself in the games in Boston. Obviously, he played phenomenal. I believe he averaged 28 a game at home. But these three games, Kyrie was just not good, not good enough.
Yeah, the division is really, really stark. Three games in Boston, he scored 43 total points on 53 shots. Shot 34% from the floor, 3-for-17 from three, and only generated 4 free throw attempts in 119 minutes across those three games. And in Dallas, as you mentioned, 56 points, 28 a game on 50% shooting, 5-for-12 from three. So 40 plus from three, and then 7 free throw attempts in 86 minutes there. So like the defenders weren't different. You know, you can certainly chalk a lot up to the waves of defenders that Boston could throw at him, starting with Jrue Holiday, who was an absolute menace all series long. But then you shake Jrue Holiday, you got Derek White there. You shake Derek White, you got to deal with, you know, Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum on a switch. Al Horford was fantastic on switches in this series, like exceptional.
37 years young.
exceptionally good at staying with those guys and forcing really tough jumpers. So yeah, they had a super, super difficult time generating any good looks for Kyrie, generating space. At a certain point, you're the smallest guy on the court and that shows up. But yeah, I think you're absolutely right to note that, like, if nothing else, you can't rule out at this point that the aura in that building, the atmosphere, whatever associations he's got with it, whatever, he didn't succeed there. He had a really, really tough time there. And they needed, as you mentioned, they needed more, like the whole recipe, the recipe that led to, and we should also just take a minute to shout out the Mavericks. Like they got to the fucking finals. Like,
yes, they did.
That was a team that was 29-23 and got to the finals. And yes, it took the big trades. It took the, you know, the addition of PJ Washington, took the addition of Daniel Gafford, took the juggling of the lineups, the shakeup of the rotation, a remarkable season for them and a remarkable postseason for them. The formula that transferred that, or that transformed that team, that 17-2 or 18-2 run down the end of the season, was Kyrie plus Luka plus defense. And the formula that got them a win was Luka being dominant in the first half, Kyrie being the running buddy, and then the defense being able to short circuit the Celtics offense just enough. And none of that was there for them tonight. Like, Luka's stat line winds up being good, but the impact just was not there. The early step backs weren't going. The early, you know, leaning, getting into the lane and leaning. A couple of those went down, but not enough to shake the Celtics out of their defense or to make up for the threes that the Celtics were hitting on the other end. And it was just wound up being that repeat, that microcosm of the series as a whole. Luka trying to make tough twos and the Celtics getting repeated great looks from three. So Luka at the end, you know, was not willing to give any credence to the idea that the injuries were impacting him, which is, I think, smart considering he had a phenomenal game four with all the same stuff and then had 2 days off after that. So whether it was the question of, like, can you defend, was the sprained knee harming you, was the chest, the thoracic contusion being an issue, was your ankle an issue, was the minutes an issue, whatever, he was just like, oh, listen, I was out there and I wasn't good enough. But that's the next level. And we know we talked about that the last time we talked. You mentioned we don't want to harp on it and hammer it. One of the big
No. I do want to.
Yeah, no, okay.
I just didn't want to do it off the jump. Top. I wanted, yeah.
Yeah.
Because, no. Like, it wasn't just the defense. There's a play I remember in the first half on this side of the – no, in the second half, this side of the floor. Luka, Derek White, it was the right corner, baseline. And he just, like, lets Derek White go by him to get an offensive rebound. And he's just like, there was a play at the top of the key where – there was some screen action or whatever, but it wasn't like he was in a pick and roll. And then he just allows Drew to walk around him and wide open to the back. It really gave me his energy was just porous. Like, I mean, someone around Minnesota told me that they thought a lot of their guys just wanted to get game four in Dallas to not get swept. And I could not think about that tonight watching Luka plod up and down the court. He didn't really seem to give a shit. And it was really disappointing because, like, there were moments like game five OKC that felt similar to game four at home. And look, anyone listening at home is going to know that anyone in the media, we didn't want to go back to Dallas. But, like, you want to see the game's greatest put out the game's greatest efforts.
Right.
Like, the effort wasn't there. Like, he's getting Al Horford on switches and Kristaps Porzingis, who can barely move on street. He's going to have to get surgery and be out for months. And he's just settling for step backs. It's just, I think it's more alarming that he can pick and choose when to learn from the lessons than when, like the fact that he got exposed and had all the criticism and responded and then, like, didn't keep it going. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, to me, that was even more disappointing. Like, I'm not, like, ready to bring out my pitchforks and say, Luka Doncic, you need to, like, get your shit together, man. But, like, if you want to get back here and you want to win it, just don't do it for one game and then, like, have everyone be like, oh, Luka responded, and then come out and do this. Like, it's just, it was so disappointing. It really was.
the thing that I kept thinking about, and I mean, everybody's wired differently. So how one person responds is not how the next person's going to respond to a set of stimuli, right? All of the discussion, you know, throughout their run up and in the middle of the series, you know, the questions were coming about like, Jaylen Brown, what did you take away from that loss to the Heat in game 7 last year? Jason Tatum, what did you take away from that loss to the Warriors being up 2-1 a couple of years ago and then falling down, losing 3 straight games in the finals? And Jaylen Brown said something. Jaylen Brown said a lot of cool shit, but Jaylen Brown said something that is just going to stick in my brain. The quote was, "My experiences, the heartbreaks, the losses have all kind of cultivated into what you see now. I don't want to feel that again." And that's what it is. Like,
yeah,
you hope. I mean, we maybe don't get to be prescriptive about how people respond to stuff, but if there's a story and a narrative arc to be written for the great players in this league, it is when you deal with this setback for the first time, when you get to the grandest stage and you are knocked down, it is incumbent upon you to respond to that, to take the lessons you need to take from that to get back there. This is Luka Doncic's opportunity. All of the greats that came before him that were laid low had the opportunity, and not all of them did it. Not all of them got back, right? Charles Barkley never got, you know, never wound up winning the title. Karl Malone never wound up winning the title. Patrick Ewing never wound up winning the title. A lot of those guys never got back to the same stage.
Let me give you some modern ones that just came to mind. Russell Westbrook and James Harden never got back.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, those guys did learn lessons to, evolve them in their careers, but also have been dogged by questions about style of play and whether they were ever able to really be fluid enough in their games and amenable and adaptable enough to do what they needed to do to win. This is the questions that he's going to face now. These are the stakes that he has to play for. We've seen you do it. We now know, even with a bulky knee and a banged up chest and a messed up ankle playing 40 minutes a game against the best defense in the league, we've seen you do it. So now we know you can. And so to whom much has been given, much is required. That's what it comes down to now. And the hope is that Luka Doncic, after taking the time he needs to get his body right and get his mind right and whatever else, is able to this summer respond to that. And then we see the version of Luka Doncic we saw this season was the best version we have seen. Maybe not in the best shape all the way around, but in terms of his game and his approach and his willingness to, sublimate himself sometimes to Kyrie Irving and get everybody involved, all that. It was the best Luka we've seen. And there is, I think, a widespread belief that there is more that there can be tapped into there. And this series has to show him what is required to get there. Those guys got there on the other side of it, and that's why they're champions holding the big gold trophy. He's got to get there too. And so, you know, that's not a particularly satisfying bit of analysis that's like, instructive, but this is what happens. At a certain point, it becomes a blunt object. Like, he's got to get to that place. And failure is part of the deal. And so, like, now that you've done that, you've had the failure, you've had what that feels like. Jaylen Brown had that saying, "I never want to feel that again." So what does that motivate you to do? And what is it going to motivate Luka Doncic to do?
The last thing on Luka, like, he doesn't need to become a defensive stopper. He just needs to become someone that isn't such an attractive option for the other team to put in pick and roll after pick and roll after pick and roll that Jason Kidd is defending him for and kind of making excuses for. Because, like, no matter what, there are going to be certain – I mean, this is not like a uniform thought around the league, but there are just going to be certain coaching staffs that are going to say, okay, well, that guy, whether it's Jalen Brunson, whether it's Trae Young back when Atlanta's been in the playoffs, like, they're running pick and roll every play on their side of the thing, so let's just double their workload and make them do it.
Yep.
There are other coaching staffs who just don't. They're like, we're not disrupting what we do to go – we're not going to get out of our, you know, standard stuff to just manipulate things and attack this one matchup. But there are certain staffs who do, and someone's celebrating.
Hell yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, you just got to put yourself in a position to not be that guy. Because, look, you're 6'7". You can bully people on that side of the floor, too, just like you can put your ass in dudes on the block and throw a shoulder and what have you. So there's opportunity for him to improve on that side of things without saying that he needs to become an all defensive player. Like, we're not saying you need to be Jaylen Brown and you need to decide, okay, you know what? Take my game to the next level. I want to be Eastern Conference Finals and Finals MVP. I'm going to go guard the best player every single night and pick him up 94 feet. I'm not saying you got to do that. You just need to be not a liability. And forget about that. You need to be an average defender in order to do this. And that's not saying much with the tools he already has and the fact that they're already going to put him on the weakest matchup possible to try to spare him. And they're not going to go up in the finals likely against this Celtics team every time, this exact team that is built with real driving kick, you know, five out dudes that can all just hunt you. Whether you're, if you know, if that's that's part of why the Drew stuff started off so easily with him rolling, because Luka was guarding him. He's like, oh, I'm just going to go screen the ball then because we're going to get something out of it. And they did. So that's really all it's about. It's just about being serviceable.
Yeah. A couple things I want to get back to, because, I mean, the game, you know, our note in here, super producer John Gennaro, who we're pouring one out for John tonight for his Mavericks. But he notes that, you know, the game.
Celtics poured out a lot in the locker.
I don't doubt it. The game was pretty much over after the first quarter. I had mentioned this, you know, I was in the press release the last, you know, when we were in Dallas, and Kid was talking about the importance of closing quarters. Well, they give up a 9-0 run in the last like minute or 2 minutes of the first quarter, where it's turnovers. And as you mentioned, targeting Luka, it's Drew Holiday and Sam Hauser in that like pitch and catch action, chasing the ball. Pitch it to you. Luka jumps out to try to stop the ball so Sam Hauser doesn't shoot a three. It's Drew rolling into space. Bad turnovers. They go and do it again. They're getting layups. They're getting threes. They're turning the ball over. And, you know, you wind up with a 10-point deficit going into the second quarter. And you're, again, fighting uphill the whole time. And there's just this sense of, like Kid said, yeah, it snowballed quickly where the turnovers led to easy baskets or wide open threes. They took advantage of that. We couldn't keep scoring or keep pace with them. And that was, again, the story of the series. Both reads are right. Either Dallas's defense wasn't good enough or Dallas just couldn't score enough with the Celtics. Both wound up being true and both wound up coming back to bite them in a major way. And, you know, basically the only other time Dallas got close, we were talking about it in our sort of group chat, the Slack, where they go on an 8-2 run to get it back within single digits in the second quarter. The one period where we didn't really talk about Kristaps Porzingis played tonight. He was and very clearly was not himself after going through that. I can't even remember the specific words of the injury, but the quote rare leg injury that he's been dealing with. And been, you know, working his ass off to get back on the court. But very clearly, Dallas putting him in action. He's not moving super well. So when in the second quarter, it's time to go give Al Horford a rest. They go with Tatum at the five. They go small. Dallas gets four straight layups or dunks and gets back within at least three possessions. And then, but that's it. Celtics go on a 19-7 run to close the second quarter. And it ends with you got Tatum hitting that sidestep three. Tatum, who had been, and the number on this is ridiculous, so I want to make sure I read it right. Tatum had been 25 for 90 on pull-up threes in the playoffs before game five and 10 for 43 on the step backs, so 23%. He finally gets one of those to go. It puts them up 20, and it feels like it's over.
Yeah.
And then Peyton goddamn Pritchard again checks in for that buzzer-beating shot, drains it again, and it's, what, 23 at half? And then that's it. You know,
game one till he banked. This one was all cotton.
Yeah, he was like, I'm not going to go with the unseemly, unsightly, banking it off the window. And that's it. Like basically an entire second half of garbage time from there, where we were just sort of waiting for the coronation, and the only drama left was who's going to win MVP.
Yeah, MVP goes to Jaylen Brown, and let's just riff on him before we go to an ad break. Because you mentioned the quote, you know, I don't want to feel this again. He's spoken pretty routinely this postseason about not caring anymore about what people say. And that, like, all the shit he's had to deal with is what's made him stronger. I will say, watching him on the podium here, or on the stage, when Adam Silver announced the MVP, he seemed genuinely surprised.
Okay, were you surprised?
I really thought it could have gone either way. I don't even know what was the final vote tally. Do you know?
I don't have it in front of me. I can look it up, but I know I was surprised. I thought that Tatum was going to wind up getting it because of what this last game turned into, and the general, like, he winds up leading them in points and rebounds and assists, not just in the series, but also for the whole postseason, you know, caps it, you know, how much he was the engine of the driving kick and all that stuff. I kind of thought that would wind up working in his favor, but Brown winds up winning the ballot there, winds up being the selection, and so certainly richly deserved, but I was a little bit surprised by it.
Sam Hauser is now out on the court with a WWE belt and a cigar.
Incredible.
Yeah, I think we've talked about the two-way brilliance. To me, that's why Jaylen Brown got it. The fact that he's up in Luka's shorts.
A 7-4 vote.
7-4 vote. Yep. It's 11. I thought it was 9 people.
Nope. Panel of 11, including one Vincent Goodwill from Yahoo including Sports.
Including one Vincent Goodwill.
Who voted for Jaylen.
So, yeah, to me, that was a deciding factor. It was the fact he was all over Luka, picking him up at the opposite foul line to the point that Dallas is setting screens for Luka before he's even crossing half court. And he just always, from a feelings standpoint, he just always kind of delivered when, like, they needed it.
Mm-hmm.
That third quarter in game 3.
That's really what sealed it, I think.
Even tonight, like, he kind of got hot at that. What was the end of the first? Forget exactly when it was when he hit the corner 3, and I don't know. He felt like the dude that was leading the charge from, like, a physical, like, battle imagery, if you want to use that. And I thought from the, you know, 2 years ago when everyone's making fun of his handle, again, I'm leaving here closing my eyes when I imagine Jaylen Brown thinking of that right to left through the legs crossover that he can do anything out of now.
Mm-hmm.
Pull up, explode past you. He's got his own little Kobe bag of, I'm going to get into the paint and hit you with a shoulder and I can turn over both. Flawless player. I do not see a flaw in that man's game. And it's a remarkable achievement for someone who, number 3 draft pick in 2016. It was all about Ben Simmons versus Brandon Ingram.
Yeah.
That was the big debate. And it was a debate years into it when Simmons does what he does for a little while, becoming a multi-time all-star and an all-defensive player, and Brandon Ingram got kind of anointed when he was an all-star in New Orleans. This dude's just straight up better than both of them. Simmons is not even in the league for like a legitimate,
I mean, like, technically
way.
Speaking, yeah, he's still on the roster.
He's a member of the roster. He's going to make like $40 million this year, but that dude doesn't play basketball on a regular basis. Brandon Ingram, I don't know what his outcome's going to be right now, but all the talk around the league is that he's a major, major trade candidate because the Pelicans aren't going to want to extend him. Jaylen Brown's got the richest contract in league history. He just won finals MVP. So, and he was a dude who at Cal, far more of a raw athlete. People never believed that the jumper was going to be there. There was talk of him being like too smart. And that was like an issue that he was going to have more focus. And I remember back during COVID when he went down to Atlanta to like lead one of the George Floyd marches, like he got some flack for that. Like, the dude is everything you could possibly want Jaylen Brown to become. If you are a Boston Celtics fan, if you're in this front office. And I think he like really deserved that. I mean, Tatum, it felt like some shedding of demons, like we said, with him getting to the rim and all the, I mean, we'll talk about these two guys together after the break, but Brown, I feel like he has had more of like a coda to his career at this point. Tatum, it kind of feels like he just like finally got there. I think from like a maturation standpoint, from Tatum was always kind of like expected to be this. I think Jalen's had more of an uphill, like an underdog climb and scrap to become this version of himself.
Yeah, I can't claim to have much information about the grassroots process, but I did see somebody say, like, yeah, it's just really inspiring to see a five-star who went to Duke and was picked third overall finally break through and beat the odds to get to this place. But yeah, I mean, Jaylen Brown, it just also, like, you think about the all-time, like, smacking down every doubter and hater with everybody who had any kind of could speak at the side of their mouth to you and, you know, look at you askance. Dude responds to the lowest moment of his professional career by making $300 million, winning Eastern Conference Finals MVP, winning Finals MVP, winning a championship. And like, if any of you would now fix your mouths to say anything about Jaylen Brown, good luck. I don't think, you know, whether he actually doesn't care or says he doesn't care because that's what you say when you do care, but you don't want people to know you don't care, whatever. He doesn't have to care anymore because he's got an awfully impressive argument ender.
There you go. All right, we're going to take a quick break and be right back to talk about what comes next for the Celtics and the Mavericks. Welcome back to No Cap Room here on Ball Don't Lie podcast. Sitting here still, courtside, confetti, things are happening. Dan in a Midtown Manhattan office. The Celtics, they expect to be back here. That is the future in their minds because this Tatum and Brown iteration. You know, it's funny. I tweeted this out at one point during the game because I've been getting ready for the offseason to start now. It already started, 12:01 Eastern. It started before we started recording this. Right now, teams can negotiate with a free agent. So that could happen before we wake up. But this has been such a mixing and matching process of finding the right pieces around Tatum and Brown. And I was looking back, I saw a note. A lot of this is like a stream of consciousness that I, when I get these like phone calls and someone says something, it was Celtics trying to move Brogdon? Marcus Smart is gettable. Derek White is the guard they want to keep. And I don't think when the Celtics traded Marcus Smart, they envisioned Jrue Holiday becoming part of this. They definitely envisioned Kristaps Porzingis being part of this because they very quickly turned around and acquired him from the Wizards. But to me, it's definitely like this is a win from a team building standpoint of the fact that Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, 107 playoff games together, the largest number of games for teammates ever before they won a title. And in today's era, that's just, it's so rare that you will get that opportunity. Like, we just talked about Ben Simmons and Brandon Ingram before. Like, Ben and Joel were supposed to do that in Philly. B.I. and Zion were supposed to be that in New Orleans. And so on and so forth. And this team, you know, there were calls for them to split up the two Jays. There was a point before their run to 22, before their run to the finals, where they were like 11th, was it? They were one game under 500, 22-23, I believe it was, in like January. And they turned that switch and they got here. If they did not, because remember the year before 2021, they were a 7 seed and lost in the first round.
Yeah, they were a 500 team that got swept by the Nets, by Kyrie Irving's Nets.
There was a chance that this never happened if they didn't turn that thing around. So you credit the front office, which, you know, at that point in time, Brad Stevens was not the GM.
Yep.
And ownership group for fronting the bill for this. And now it's going to get really expensive. But they're going to, I mean, look, everyone is under contract for next season, aside from Luke Kornet, Svi Mykhailiuk, and Xavier Tillman. I am not ready to write this in stone, but I'm pretty confident Xavier Tillman won't be back. Just he was traded from Memphis because of impending free agency. The dude's at $1.9 million right now after being a second round pick. anyone of his caliber, they're asking for the mid-level. I'd say he's going to get it, but you're going to want a good chunk of it, 7+. Not in Boston's cards.
And
but everyone,
yeah, and he'll walk away from Boston probably in all likelihood, and he will, anytime he comes back into the city limits, he will never have to pay for a drink again because of what did in game 3 of the NBA Finals.
Oh, yeah. Shout out X, the master of Sudoku. It was very lovely to me in the postgame or in the pregame locker room. And the Celtics are going to be, we talked about the free agency, you know, starting. The Celtics are going to, I think, factor pretty prominently in this early stuff. Jason Tatum, extension eligible, book that. Like, he's going to be signing that probably before the parade.
Yeah.
No, sorry, you can't sign. You could just start to negotiate.
Can circle in on, and, you know, teams are fond of
trending towards.
Yeah, can moving toward an agreement, which I believe the number is $315 million, and I don't think you're going to find a single person within the Boston city limits or certainly within the Celtics organization that wouldn't leap at the opportunity to lock that in and have him and Jaylen Brown, even at a combined $600+ million, locked up for the next half decade because, yeah, they're your window.
Derek White will also be extension eligible. I'm pretty confident he's going to sign that too.
Yeah.
So then you're looking at, like, Porzingis is signed now through 25-20. Like, all these dudes are going to be signed for at least 2 more years.
Mm-hmm.
And then Drew's on the books with a player option until 27-28. Like, this team, there was a prevailing thought around the league that last summer was the summer to go make your moves before the next CBA kicked in. Boston did that, man. Like, and then some. Because all these teams are going to struggle. Like, we might see someone like Gary Trent Jr., for example, sign what looks like a pretty big contract in Toronto. Just throwing out a hypothetical, an educated hypothetical. For a team, just to keep that salary slot open, because if you're over the cap, you then can't take back any more than you can send out. Forget about the aggregation and all that stuff that happens in the second apron. So for Boston to have all these guys already in the building and a willingness to pay the tax because you won the title. So I was talking to I'm going to butcher Pagliuca, Pags. In the locker room, he was drenched. It was like I was talking to someone in a bar at a nightclub on the dance floor. We were like nose to nose. I was asking him all about Brad Stevens for something I would like to work on at some point. And these guys are fully paying the tax to keep this team together. So that's just to say, I don't even think there needs to be any more analysis. This team won. Everyone outside of Al Horford is pretty damn young. All things considered, I mean, Drew's 34, but the next oldest guy after that is Porzingis at 28. Horford, by all accounts, plans to come back. He's got one more year left at $9.5 million. There was some scuttle that he could retire upon lifting that trophy. Don't think that's going to be the case. So at least for next year, they've got this whole group back of all their rotation pieces. Sam Hauser's only on the books for $2 million next year. So the Celtics are here to stay, and if you really want to pull back everything, depending on what Philly does, there doesn't seem to be much competition really anywhere in the Eastern Conference.
Well, there's uncertainty to a lot of, I mean, and that will maybe this week will result in trending toward resolving some of that uncertainty, you know, where you've got the OG Anunoby question in New York, you've got Pascal Siakam in Indiana, you've got I'm going to be very interested in what goes on in Milwaukee, although I don't know that they're in that same sort of boat in terms of their in-house extension candidates or whatever. I don't know exactly what they've got on the books that they got to, you know, work on before free agency. There's not a, I mean, the big one is Philly with a healthy Embiid with the cap space that they've got you have the cap space, you've got the draft capital to be able to go make moves. And then once you do that and you bring whatever external talent you want to bring in, then you have the Tyrese Maxey extension that you do on the back end of that once you've paid everything, and then you go over the cap to go do that. So Philly's sort of the big unanswered question there. But yeah, I mean, Boston was 14 games clear of the rest of the East this year. And it was Mazzulla's first full year with like a full training camp, actually having his guys in. They got Jrue Holiday like right before camp started. They didn't even
I don't know if we said yet. Joe Mazzulla, now the youngest coach in NBA history to win a championship.
Yeah, 35 years old. I mean, absolutely incredible. And
how does that make you feel, Dan?
I mean, everything makes me feel. I don't know if you see the lights are going out behind me, and whatever lights are on are going off. The lights inside my eyes are going off. The lights in my soul are going off. I'm already thinking about it's 2 o'clock in the morning. And I'm gonna have to get a cab home and write. So yeah, a lot of lights are going off, but Joe Mazzulla's light is gonna stay bright and lit. And I wouldn't be surprised if he's in the gym tomorrow morning to roll Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and then in the office to start thinking about how he can iterate on the offensive scheme that produced the most efficient offense in NBA history, on the defensive scheme that created the Wolves were the best, you know, the most efficient defense over the course of the year. They absolutely got destroyed by the Mavericks, and then the Mavericks could not score against the Celtics defense. So what they've built there and what he has optimized is a real monster. As you mentioned, the entire top eight comes back. Moving forward down the line, there are off ramps and pivot points if they want them. You know, like the way that these things are staggered. You mentioned Porzingis has his extension kicks in. He's on the books for two more years. So not next summer, but the one after that, they can decide what they want to do with him. Holiday the summer after that. Horford, you know, next summer. There's like big chunks of salary or, you know, spots that they can move around over in each of the next 3 years. But basically, this is it. They've opened a window here and put themselves in position where, like, you know, you could, I mean, I don't know, maybe Jordan Walsh turns into a contributor. Maybe Jaden Springer that they brought in from Philly winds up being somebody on a comparatively lower cost deal. It winds up backfilling some of those rotation spots. They've got some options. And the fact that Tatum is, 26 and Brown is 28, or they're going to be that going next season, it provides optionality for them. And it provides a big wide open window for a team that knows how it wants to play, that knows how to play that way. And that has basically essentially like a solve for both current structures of offensive and defensive basketball. Like, they can switch everything and play drop, and they can play five out, or they can play four out, one in, and they can move their pieces around the chessboard in a way that makes them almost impossible to deal with on both ends of the floor. Quick just note, Tim Bontemps at ESPN has reports that Porzingis told him his injury will require surgery, will have a recovery process of, quote, a few months. It's torn medial retinaculum, allowing dislocation of the posterior tibialis tendon. He worked to get back.
I'd say that's been expected.
Yeah, I think everybody figured that was what was going to be coming, but just Porzingis saying it now. So the expectation is, I mean, also, like, if you're a big fan of Latvia in the Olympic qualifying tournaments and stuff like that, tough news for you. But
oh God, what was the name of that point guard that we loved?
I don't remember, I do remember liking that point guard.
He's good.
But yeah, so
it's going
to
eat me.
So a few months of, that's something to
Arturs Zagars.
There it is. So the Porzingis's, you know, status for the beginning of next year, if he goes and he has surgery, it takes him a few months to get back. Maybe he's not ready for camp. Maybe he's not ready to start next season, yada, yada. But generally speaking.
Well, they didn't need him for the first three. They didn't need him for any of this anyway.
Yeah. I mean, they went 10-2 without him in the playoffs. It seems like they're working all right. And then Al Horford, all of 38 years old and his 17th, 18th season, is out there switching onto Kyrie Irving and forcing him into bad shots. So they got some plans, and they got the guys to be able to execute him. And yeah, it's a pretty big problem for the rest of the East to have to deal with, and whoever the hell comes out of the West too.
Speaking of, I mean, for Dallas to get back to this stage, they have a tall task, just being that the West is really tough.
Yeah.
Their offseason isn't really that interesting, I will say, being that they also have pretty much everyone on the books for next year, except for Derek Jones. Pause. Before we get to that, I just want to say that's part of why the PJ Washington and Daniel Gafford deals were so worthwhile to this team, being that both these dudes are 25 and they're on the books through 25, 26. PJ just signed a 3-year deal last summer, and Gafford had signed a 4-year deal the year before. And they're right around the mid-level. So you're getting two starters for that number, $14 million each, basically, give or take, AAV. Pretty damn good value. Mm-hmm. So that's part of why they wanted to go after. They saw them as being long-term pieces of this. It would help if PJ Washington shot 45% from three like he did in the Oklahoma City series.
Yeah, starting to feel like that one was the outlier as opposed to the that was the exception that proves the rule, which is that if you let PJ Washington shoot, he's probably going to miss two-thirds of them.
So that's the thing. Like Derek Jones Jr., who this team got on a minimum, they would like to have back. Luka would like to have him back based off of everything I have been told. And the Mavericks are aware that they only have the taxpayer mid-level to give him, which is below. I don't know exactly the number off the top of my head. I need to get that ready to go. The full mid-level is 13, and that's probably more in the ballpark of what he would like to get. If the Mavericks would like to retain Derrick Jones, because he probably will be above the minimum and above the taxpayer after what he did this playoff run, they are going to have to trade one of Tim Hardaway Jr. or Maxi Kleba, which they've been trying to trade Tim Hardaway Jr. for like 3 years. The one thing that benefits them now is he's now an expiring contract, $16 million for next season. And like we were just saying about the Gary Trent stuff, I think there's a greater chance of teams willing to take on that type of deal now just to have that salary slot to be able to do future things with. If they're able to move one of those two guys, though, and Kleba was a shell of himself this series, I do wonder if that's like a potential yips type thing moving forward, because the guy couldn't have hit water if he was on a boat. You know that one? And
I do know that one.
I felt bad for him, to be honest, but like Luka, you could tell, didn't trust that dude. And that's a far cry from playoffs past where he's hitting seven threes and can't miss. And he's the one guy Luka trusts. You know what I mean?
He had a point tonight where he grabbed an offensive rebound and didn't even look to. He was on the right side of the rim with no defender near him. All he had to do was put the ball up off the backboard and he didn't even do it. And you could kind of see Luka like raise his hands like, what are we doing? But I mean, I don't know if it's because the shoulder hurt him so much he didn't even really want to lift his arm up or what, but but by the end of it, there was like he had nothing left to give, it felt like. And Tim Hardaway Jr., what he had left to give came in garbage time of game four. Wouldn't be a big surprise to see one or both of those guys on the move.
So Kleba's still on the books for two more years at $11 million. I think that just makes it more logical that THJ would be the one out the door. And then when you do that, you open up both your biannual and your non-taxpayer. So
right.
That is really the only thing to look at for Dallas. And it's just a matter of internal growth from there. Like Derek Lively, Jason Kidd said it after game four when he hits that corner three. And I remember, again, going through my notes tonight, I saw in my thing, Derek Lively shoots it better than we saw at Duke. Was Duke even using him appropriately? He's going to turn a lot of heads when he's shooting it in pre-draft workouts and blah, blah, blah. That's the next step of his progression. 20-year-old rookie. We've said it. We are super impressed by this kid. There was someone with Dallas who said to me in Dallas before game four that they expect Lively's growth to be so rapid that they're going to view him as a free agency signing every single year moving forward because they expect him to take such high leaps.
Right.
But then it's the Luka stuff we talked about. It's can they get something out of Omax Prosper, who only saw garbage time here, who they used a late pick on in the first here. And he was someone that everyone, I going through the notes, he was someone that people thought Boston was trying to trade up for, interestingly enough, this time last year. The other guys who didn't really play in this series, I don't know how much room of internal growth you're expecting out of the Jaden Hardys of the world, but I mean the hope for Dallas is definitely that PJ Washington can find some type of growth as a shooter. Exum can retain his strong play throughout this season. Omax can do something. Lively can continue to improve, and maybe Luka, fully rested, fully healed, takes some more responsibility on the defensive side of things, signs a Supermax extension, and they're right back in the thick of things in the West.
which, not for nothing, isn't the worst plan I ever heard, right? Like, you know, you have a top three MVP candidate, you know, basically year, or top five MVP candidate year in, year out, top three finisher this year who led the league in scoring, creates more points and more offense than anybody outside of the guy in Denver. And Kyrie was, you know, if Kyrie continues to be on the path of like, I know that I'm the second banana here, and I know that, how to get in where I fit in and how to elevate and keep prodding this forward. That's the recipe for like a top 7-8 offense, right? And so then the question is always, what can you do on the other end of the floor? I think we've established now, like, the future goes as Luka, Kyrie, Derek Lively kind of move it. This season, when they had those three guys on the floor, they scored 122.1 points per 100 possessions, which would have been the number one offense in the league. The defense was below league average, but I think we've seen a lot, enough to be really encouraged by what Lively can be as an anchor on that end. You know, even the stuff like, you know, their when they were having a hard time shutting off the corner threes when Gafford was on the floor, like, Lively can just get out there. He's longer and quicker and can make the rotations. He's more athletic. So where, like, you can take away some of the dunker spot stuff that Drew was doing or that Derek White was doing, and then also rotate out to the corner. Like, Lively just creates new possibilities for what you can be defensively. And you know, Gafford then maybe slides into the more comfortable, like, energy backup role that he, or, you know, I mean, whatever. The minute who starts, who finishes doesn't, it is always up in the air. But, like, they've got something there in that battery. They and there's a plan of attack that I think makes a ton of sense. And yeah, you look, I mean, Lively's 20, Luka's 25, Washington's 26, Gafford's 26, Josh Green is 24, Prosper is, Omax is 22, so a little bit older than you would maybe anticipate for somebody who only got like 340 minutes this year. But there's a handful of guys who are in that mix. The fact that they don't own their own first round pick because they're still out of, they're at both their first and their seconds this year, but they owe that, the last pick from they owed to the Knicks from the initial Porzingis deal, which now, as we get to the end of that line, Porzingis is in Boston and winds up winning the title with them. And then the pick, you're still out to go to the Knicks, but this would be the end of that obligation, I believe. So you don't have, you know, that ammo, but there's still a lot to build around. And I think, yeah, I mean, to me, the biggest growth opportunity is with Luka, seeing what it requires at the highest level, and then with Lively being, you know, the arrow pointed basically straight up, you know, in a larger role next season. Is that enough to guarantee anything? I mean, we have to remember they were a 5 seed, right? Like, they were, and you look at the rest of the West, like, Denver obviously has questions to answer in terms of what they do with the rest of their rotation, but, like, Denver's going to be back. Minnesota, they seem like they're going to be paying, although their ownership situation, who knows, they're going to be back. Memphis, after a year from hell, they're going to be back in the
mix.
Don't
say that. Shh, shh, shh. I want to go to Memphis in the preseason. I don't want anyone else getting any ideas that Memphis is going to be back.
My apologies. I'm sure no one else notices that they're going to have Ja Morant healthy.
I know. I'm just kidding.
The Clippers, I don't know. I mean, your guess is as good as mine, but, like, there's the Clippers. The Suns, I think, are going to be fascinating. The Lakers, they're certainly not going to be boring. The Thunder were the number one seed in the freaking conference and gave the Mavericks the toughest series that they had before they got to Boston. All this, you know, like, there's plenty of competition there. Also,
a 7'4" French guy.
I was just about to talk about him. Yeah. Like, and who, you know, whatever they do to add around him. So, like, nothing is guaranteed in this West. It's going to require the absolute best out of Luka. And then also a front office with that has hit some home runs and really got that, you know, with Nico Harrison reorienting the organization the last year and a half or so, gotten the roster moving in a positive direction. But it's going to require even more, and they don't have a whole lot in the chamber to be able to make new additions, as you mentioned. So the limited flexibility they have, and the limited moves they've got to make, they really got to make them count to provide the support structure for that growth from Luka, that growth from Lively, the rest of that young core.
Also, maybe just have Michael Finley let Luka drink some beer, and maybe things will go differently.
I have to imagine that not a whole lot of people are going to be able to stop Luka from drinking a beer right about now. I feel like he probably feels like he needs one. I don't think anybody's going to be getting in between him and the cold ones.
I could use a beer right now myself. Brother. Dan, it's been a ride. It's been a great year potting along with you.
You're talking about this like we're not doing this again in 2 days.
I know. But we're done here for tonight. I mean, it's now June 18th, but June 17th, 617 Boston area code. Also the same date as the 2008 championship. Your Boston Celtics are the 2024 NBA champions. Jaylen Brown, the Bill Russell Finals MVP. Jason Tatum on the mountaintop. Joe Mazzulla, again, youngest head coach in NBA history. Brad Stevens from the sidelines to the executive booth. And who's to say they can't do it again next year, even though we have our sixth straight different champion in a league full of parity. The Celtics will try to do the unthinkable and build a dynasty. That's all I got.
I think that's the last thing is, like, I don't know if you can build a dynasty in this age, but I think what you can do, the best you can hope for, is get yourself close every year. And that's kind of what the Celtics have been for the better part of a decade, and what they've set themselves up to do for the remainder of the next half decade while they've got Tatum and Brown in this window. They hit an absolute home run rebounding from the KG and Pierce era. They got those picks. They nurtured them. They fostered them. They were competitive along the way. And now this is where it pays off. So I don't know if they're going to be able to win two or three. We thought that Denver was going to be on a war rig ride from hell for the next 3 years. And then they wound up not even making the conference finals. So a lot can happen between now and this time next year. But I would have a hard time believing that the Celtics don't at least have a chance in the next couple of seasons, because that's what they've built and that's what they've got, what they're going to be bringing back. It's awfully, awfully impressive.
Yeah, it's cool. And we got to end. But it is cool when you think about that there is a direct lineage of the 08 team, that the picks from those guys became these guys, and they're right back. So shout out Boston, shout out Celtics fans, and shout out Dan Devine, and shout out super producer John Gennaro for doing all the things to make this show look and sound great. He'll be up super late on the West Coast and waking up super early to get the day started tomorrow. Thank you for listening to us all season long. Like Dan said, we'll be back on Thursday, probably breaking down some of the early extension and contract stuff and looking ahead to draft and free agency and all that jazz, because it starts up immediately. We thank you for listening all year long. We thank you for sticking locked with us over the coming weeks. And please come back again in 72 hours for another edition of No Cap.